Hi, I'm Sophie, and this is Age Well with Dr. Sophie Schotter, a space where, together with my producer Fee, I talk to good friends and trusted experts on how they age well, whether it's their latest supplement stack, what's on their bathroom shelf, or a new biohacking device that really seems to work. Because for me, aging well is all about looking and feeling like the best possible version of ourselves, both inside as well as out. Remember, you can also find even more ideas and expert tips on my social channels at Dr. Sophie Schotter. I'd love you to come and join me over there too. So this is my show. Welcome along. As always, thank you so much for listening. And this week, Fee and I are in conversation with Alice Hart Davis. Alice, you're known for your refreshingly honest approach, something that I think has built huge trust equity in a space where many people aren't always honest about aesthetics and what they've done. I should add that you're also a good friend as well as a patient of mine, but I'm going to throw to Fee for the first question because I know what she wants to ask you and it's something we can both talk about quite passionately. So Fee, pick it up from here.
Thank you, Sophie, and hello, Alice.
Hi there.
I am going to quote you back at you here from an interview you did with the nutritionist Fiona Lawson. And you said, quote, "Most people regard tweakments with great suspicion because of the lack of regulation in this area. Unfortunately, there are many bad practitioners and they're the ones who are accountable for all botched jobs we see. But what people don't realise is that there are also many fantastic practitioners out there. They do good work that is undetectable, so no one ever knows about it." This comment exactly mirrors a conversation that Sophie and I had on the podcast about a year ago, when we discussed aesthetics and feminism and regulations. And actually, we quoted Robbie Williams, who pretty much said the same thing. So you're in good company there. I know that both you and Sophie have been really outspoken about the lack of regulation in the aesthetics industry. And I know, Sophie, you've been doing some work with Allergan on this. So for the benefit of listeners, Allergan manufacture and develop a range of aesthetics-based brands and products from injectables to surgical products. In fact, they're a market leader in this space. But can you both talk about some of these themes? Alice, firstly, should we talk about people's willingness to be open about any treatments or tweakments they've had done? Where do you stand as well on celebrities' right to privacy versus high-profile people who claim that their flawless skin is thanks to olive oil and yoga, which may or may not be true?
Yes, just before I talk about that, Fee, can I say, that quote you said before, when I talk about bad practitioners, what I ought to clarify is non-medical practitioners,
right,
the kind of people who shouldn't be wielding needles in the first place, thanks to lack of regulation, they could do this. Because I think a lot of people don't realise that the best trainers in this whole area wouldn't dream of training non-medics. So the so-called training that these non-medics get is substandard anyway, and they just shouldn't be sticking needles in people in the first place anyway. And I know they're cheaper and all the rest, but it's all a bad business. But okay, people's willingness to be open about tweakers. I think in general, people are more open about what they're doing now, certainly than 10 years ago or 20 years ago or more when I started writing about all this. Some people, because some are still very coy about it, or only half of it. They'll say, oh, I have a little bit of this, when in fact they're doing quite a lot.
Right.
I know there was this Allergan survey not that long ago, and that said that 90% of people would be happy to tell their family and friends if they had something non-surgical done. Yes, celebs are kind of next level disingenuous, and I totally sympathise with their right to privacy. I think if I was one of them, I wouldn't apologise or explain or anything.
Mm.
But a lot of them look so fab, people ask. And the thing with all this is the facts of human physiology are that there are a lot of things that happen to our faces as they age, and they happen to all of us, and they happen to celebs too. We get expression lines that settle into wrinkles. We lose bone, which I think people don't realise, from our jawline, from our cheeks, from our forehead, all those bony arches in the face. And our facial fat, which keeps the younger face nice and smooth and plump looking, it flattens and it slides south, or you get hollowing cheeks or under the eyes, or it gathers under the jawline as a double chin. Your skin tone becomes weathered, uneven, you get redness, shred veins, pigmentation from sun exposure, your skin quality isn't so good. And these things will come to all of us to a greater or lesser extent, and to celebs. So when you see a face that's looking just the same in its 50s as it did in its 30s, or even better. You know, something is going on. So if they then claim that it's olive oil or breathing or nothing, in the case of there's a few well-known people who are saying they haven't had any aesthetic intervention, which it defies the law of nature, it defies the laws of gravity. And it's really hard to believe, and it's really unhelpful to normal people out there who are thinking, oh, maybe if I just drank more green juice, if I did more of this or less of that, or used that cream, or, you know, whatever it is. And that's not true. So that's, I'm all about trying to tell people everything I've done. They always think it's an awful lot, and they're surprised I don't look younger, different, given how much I've tried. But this is a sort of reflection of how much you can do and not look like the Bride of Wildenstein.
Which is why I guess it's so lovely. And it was surprising that someone like Pamela Anderson, of all people, and I know we're talking makeup here and not aesthetics, but when she did that whole makeup-free face, it was so refreshing, I think, for so many of us, women and men. So what are your wider thoughts about regulation in the industry? Because I know you've got lots and lots of thoughts on this.
Yeah, and it's something I've been passionate about for a long time. I've been a member of the British College of Aesthetic Medicine since I started in our specialty, and I've been a trustee now for over 3 years. And one of our key drivers is to achieve a regulatory framework, and we work very closely with other stakeholders to do that. And of course, what we have to see is, because we can't pretend that every single medical practitioner is also whiter than white. And I think when we as clinicians think about regulation, it has to start from the clinical side, from a consultation, how to manage expectations, not being afraid to say no to people, and taking away this commoditization that has happened. People don't walk into my clinic and ask for 3 areas of muscle relaxants. They walk in and they ask to, for example, feel less tired or feel less angry. And then we proceed to examine them, talk to them, and look at what we can do. That's very different than walking into somewhere and asking, for example, for your nails to be done. And so we've got this big discrepancy in practice. And I would say the majority of medical practitioners are doing things this clinical and responsible way. And we also have to make sure that people really understand the risks involved in procedures. I can never tell someone there's no risks, but I can tell them I know how to look after them if something were to go wrong, and that I'm here to do so, whether it's days, months, or years afterwards. Mm-hmm. And also, Fee, as well as BCAM, thank you for mentioning the Allergan campaign, which I think has been brilliant and I was really proud to be involved in.
Is that the ethics one?
Exactly, yeah. So it launched in June of last year, although it's something that we've been working on for a lot longer. And what Allergan have done is coming at things in a slightly different way. It's a new initiative to educate and empower both consumers and healthcare professionals. And there's a really useful resource, an A to Z of medical aesthetics. And for full transparency, I was part of putting the glossary together. But it's basically a really simple explainer of various treatments and also words that might be used or you might read somewhere or hear somewhere, but that are maybe more medical speak and you need help in understanding. And it was actually inspired by a striking bit of research that tells us that despite the fact that there's more and more interest in treatments, over 75% of people feel that they don't know enough about many of the treatments available. So again, it's two things, it's education and it's empowerment. I'd also say that people need to give these treatments the respect and the level of seriousness that they deserve. I have many patients who see me over many years, and when they come back and they say, I know I shouldn't be, but I'm nervous again, and I say, that's fine. It's a healthy reaction to have procedures being performed.
I know that one.
Yeah. And as I always say, it's not just about the treatment, it's about the practitioner. And we've all recently seen horror stories in the news where treatments have even gone fatally wrong, including the most recent one about a lady called Alice Webb, who was 33 and died in September of 2024 following a non-surgical BBL procedure on her bottom. And at the time of recording, 2 arrested people are on bail. And while they're not illegal in the UK, in 2023, Wolverhampton City Council barred one particular company from carrying them out after identifying numerous risks in their protocols, and five other local authorities have followed suit and banned other companies. And it reinforces what I've said for years, as has Alice, which is that these are extremely serious and highly skilled procedures. Mm. And there are various places where you can find registers of good practitioners. One is BCAM, the British College of Aesthetic Medicine. One is Alice's The Tweakman's Guide, where everyone is screened to be at a certain level of practice and has to be, it's not just something you can apply to be added to. And then there's also Save Face. I will also say that with these treatments, as with many others, they're often advertised on social media as risk-free or cheaper and easier alternatives to surgery. And frankly, this isn't always the case. It really can vary because nothing is risk-free at all. Not even the lightest chemical peel is completely risk-free. Mm. And when it comes to surgery and the non-surgical alternatives, everything is on a spectrum, and some things will be right for some people and other things will be right for others. So just please do your research and do look up the Allergan's A to Z of Medical Aesthetics, because it is a great resource and you can download it from their website, and we'll link to that in the show notes.
Yeah, yeah. Very well said on both counts. Alice, here's a question that you certainly get asked all the time. What are the treatments, the injectables, anything that you have on a regular basis that you feel really do deliver? And also, is there anything that you're super excited by that's coming down the pipeline?
Yeah, so much. Gosh, where to start? Well, I have a lot of toxin in my face, muscle balancing. So if you wouldn't say as much as muscle relaxing. So in my forehead, around my eyes, in my chin, in my neck, to stop that kind of stringiness you get where you're just under your jaw is attaching to your neck. And if you have injections in there, it frees the whole thing up to move back to where it used to was. Also in my jaw muscles to stop tooth grinding, which is always a great relief. And also in my armpits, which is a completely unnecessary treatment, but I love it because it means you don't sweat. It's obviously there's no muscles in your armpits. It's not for that, it's used much more superficially in the armpit to stop the nerve signals getting through to the sweat glands. So, and it's not dangerous, and it doesn't, people always think, is it safe to do a treatment like that? And it absolutely is. It's a tiny bit of you that's not sweating. There's lots of the rest of you to sweat, but it just means you don't sweat. And I tend to sweat quite a lot with nerves and stuff. Other treatments, I really ought to have a schedule of things. It tends to be a bit random because I do whatever comes up through work or whatever I'm offered that sounds exciting. So this year I've done a course of polynucleotides. I'm sure I've done some other things as well. But if I had a schedule, as well as that toxin, I would probably have, not necessarily have filler every year, but I do have an assessment to see if I needed a bit more filler. I've got a lot of filler in my face. I had an MRI 3 years ago that showed there's an awful lot sitting under the skin. But I have a kind of face that goes very hollow with aging. So it generally benefits from a bit more filler here and there. I had some filler in my lips recently, which was fab, very natural. Mm-hmm. Pigment stuff. I ought to do lasering every year for skin tone. I haven't this year. IPL or laser to take down of redness or the pigmentation. I love the idea of doing regular skin conditioning injectables. So something like Profhilo or any other kind of hyaluronic acid based skin hydrator, but I haven't heard any of that for a while. I did do these polynucleotides, which are, they're sort of DNA fragments from fish. Everyone talks about them as the fish, salmon, sperm, but it's not sperm, it's the gonad. So it is testicles and it's DNA from that. It's not the actual sperm, but obviously salmon sperm facial sounds amazing as a bizarre treatment. And it's not a facial in any way. This is delivered either through loads of little needle jabs or with a cannula. And that was great. That's my skin is looking good and happy on that. I would also add in some kind of energy treatment to tighten the skin. So energy treatment, that could be something like a laser or radio frequency microneedling or just good old microneedling or a plasma treatment or something, ultrasound, that's going to firm and kickstart the collagen and great skincare. So ideally, there would be a plan. What I'd recommend to people in general is to find a great practitioner and with them make a plan for what would work within what you're trying to do with your face, what your budget will allow, the time you have available for this, and plot out some of those things, whatever matters to you most. But yeah, my schedule's a bit random, but all these things work. Yeah. All these things work. So, and what I'm excited about is things like all these regenerative treatments. There are lots of combination treatments where people put together, I don't know, lasering and a multiplicity of injectables. So you could get PRP taken from your blood and mix that up with polynucleotide and Profhilo and inject that all in one dough. And it, if you've given it a bit of damage to work on, they do some microneedling or a bit of lasering, then all those regenerative ingredients can really go to town and synergize, sort of horrible word, but they compound. So it's like a 1:1 = at least 5, the effect. Yeah, all of that. And great skincare.
Yeah, we'll get on to skincare, but it's interesting how most people in this beauty world tend to repeat the same things, which is filler, muscle relaxants, polynucleotides, Profhilo. Mm. Like, I'm hearing the same things.
Yes.
Alice, as I know very well that you're aware, one of the side effects of some treatments is post-procedure bruising.
Oh, yes.
And I've lost count of the number of patients who mentioned it to me after your polynucleotide treatment.
Oh, they were tiny bruises, but they did show.
Fee and I heard you being interviewed by another beauty journalist that you and I both know, Caroline Hirons, and you mentioned several game-changing anti-bruising products, some of which I know and personally have love as well. But how do you either mitigate or cover up bruising? Any top tips? And I guess also swelling and redness. What do you find works for you?
Goodness, depends how much time I've got, because I often will think, oh, too bad, and I'll just style it out. And a lot of the meetings I have in this area, I can walk in with a bright red or very obviously needle marked face, and it's just like, ooh, wow, what have you done? Let's have a look. What does it look like? It's interacting with family and friends and other sort of normal people who just are appalled by it and wonder what on earth is going on. Like when I had my face burnt off with that sort of plasma machine last year, and after hiding for a day or two, I thought I am going to walk to the coffee shop and get a coffee, and I local one where I know them, and I just stared at them very hard and like, it's okay, whatever it looks like, don't say anything.
Yeah.
So, if you can ice and chill things down straight away, that helps the swelling. I tend not to swell very much. Redness, as soon as stuff is healed enough, you can cover that with makeup. It depends what it is and how much, what condition your skin is in. There are some things you only want to be covering it with Vaseline type thing or Aquaphor. But if it was bruising, what did I use on those bruises? I used Elastin Enhance. Yeah. This is a very new thing. In fact, I know I was messaging you from the train saying, help, I've got bruises. Can I come by your clinic and steal one? And you very kindly found one, because I know this stuff is magic. It's got something in it. It's called chromaffade, isn't it? The ingredient. Yeah. It actually tends to look a bit darker at first for the first couple of days, but then it speeds up the removal of that bruise. It did take a while for the bruises to go, but it was quicker than it would normally be. And what I did notice with that was there was no going yellow face, because normally I find the bruises, they will be red on the face and then there's an awful long lingering phase of them being yellow and not vanishing, which is very obvious. Lots of people said to me Arnica cream, which I would use if I hadn't got anything stronger.
I personally find Arnica tablets are great for prevention, but once a bruise is there, it's the Arnica soothing, but it doesn't actually help particularly. But the Elastin Enhance is my go-to. I love that product. Yeah.
Okay, actually, I know what I like. It's a new face product, the microcurrent device. They have a tiny little thing. It's more like a sort of thin cylinder of a device. It's called the Fix. And I've found that's really useful for things like bruises around the lips. It just improves the superficial circulation. And I think that helps. I've asked them about it and they say anecdotally they've heard it, but they don't make any claims for it. And then I cover it up with stuff like that little pot of Trini's Just a Touch Foundation. There's one called Trintron, which is great because it's quite creamy and sticky. And I'll just blot that in and then powder it down and hope it's okay.
Style it out, yeah. And I guess the same question in reverse from what I previously asked, what treatments or tweakments haven't worked for you or that you feel might have been a little bit hyped or overrated, if anything?
One that didn't work for me, which is a shame, was Endolift, which I had it was very new when I had it, because really what fat seems to be great for is removing excess sort of fat around the jowls and stuff. And I just had it as a skin tightening thing. And I had a pretty thorough going over with it in my face, but the 3-month 3D pictures, there was a very small change, but I was told afterwards I wasn't a great candidate for it. Yeah. Oh, thanks. Yeah, now you tell me after all that. Overhyped, overrated. I think what gets overhyped are people's expectations around things often, because everyone's desperate for a minimally invasive treatment that basically gives them the results of a facelift. And people tend to think that something like Skin Boosters or Profilo are going to do that. They think there's going to be one thing out there. So I think that things do get hyped up. It's largely because it raises people's expectations to a degree that, or if something creates skin tightening, the tightening is often very hard to discern to the normal photograph. You know, you need clinical pictures, you need them taken under absolutely scrupulously the same position, lighting, etc. Otherwise, it's hard to show. And before and after pictures always show the very, very best, don't they? So if the patient, I presume, so if he doesn't get the kind of result that they were hoping for, then it's difficult.
Yeah, absolutely. I think with all of these things, it boils back to the same message of having an assessment to make sure that you have the right treatments for you, and also understanding that the results with everything, but I'd say even more with energy devices, is variable. Yeah. You get your average responders, you get some people who get these incredible responses, and you get some people who don't get a response, or not as much of a response as we would hope for. And that doesn't take away from how amazing the devices are, but it means not everything works for everybody. So again, we're friends, and I've previously treated you, so I know your skin quite well. But for the benefit of our listeners, what's your skin type and what's your current routine? And would you mind name checking any products that you repeatedly use and love? So your top three cleansers, your top three acids or actives, anything exfoliant based, top three treatment or serum products, top three moisturizers and sunscreens, eye creams, hair care.
Okay, right. The full go.
And I know we sort of did a mini version of this with our travel bags when we were away together recently.
Yes, I thought mine was awfully basic. You had a lovely full stuff. I was thinking across your stash thinking, ooh, and you let me try that magic eye balm, which was very good.
Clinical skin. Yeah, it's what an
was it?
Amazing
it was an
balm.
Anhydrous. It was like a no water balm.
It's divine, isn't it?
Yes, really nice, really unusual. It's the kind of thing you put on. I think you probably need it explaining to you first. Otherwise, you put it on and think, ew, feels a bit unusual. But then
completely,
when you see the results of it, it's great. But my skin is aging combination. I mean, it's basic Anglo-Saxon Caucasian, prone to dryness and wrinkling and redness, and it burns quite easily in the sun. But it's good skin. It's holding up. It's doing well. And I have been looking after it properly since my late 30s. Because that was when I started writing about all this. And until then, I was blissfully ignorant of the need to wear sunscreen. And I couldn't quite, we dermatologists kept going on about it, but eventually the penny dropped. So I've been better about it over the years. And cleansers, I like the basic cleanser, CeraVe or Cetaphil, the gentle hydrating cleansers from either of those. Those are great. Those are very straightforward. They do the job. They feel nice and comfortable, and they are not going to stir up skin that's feeling sensitive. One which sounds awful, but which I have loved for years, is a Neostrata foaming cleanser. People tend to think foaming is going to be awful, and this is a foaming glycolic cleanser, but it's really nice, easy to use, gets the skin clean, doesn't strip it. And another fancy one I love is the IS Clinical Cleansing Complex, it's called. It's in a big blue bottle, and it's got not salicylic acid, but a salicylic precursor, and same, it's got something lactic acid in there, but it's gentle, and it suits sensitive skin, and it's just really nice. So cleansers, exfoliants. I mean, I absolutely don't go for physical exfoliants. I've loved Alpha H's Liquid Gold, which is glycolic.
I recently discovered how much alcohol that's got in it.
Oh, really?
I was quite surprised.
Oh, okay. Well, I have loved it because I like it as a sort of wipe down on my skin and would do that a couple of nights a week when not using retinol. But right, I can sort of revise my ideas now.
You know what a sucker I am for reading ingredients lists properly.
Yes, I've skipped over that bit. Paula's Choice BHA, the 2% BHA, that I like. Because I've got skin that's in a bit combination, still it tends to go spotty if it's given half a chance. And that is nice. And I think people always think that AHAs and BHAs are going to dry out the skin, but actually hydroxy acids are hydrating for the skin. That's what they were very first used for in skincare. So I find that actually quite hydrating. What else? Well, this isn't a face cream. This is something I'm using on my feet. But it's an exfoliant. It's the Neostrata Problem Dry Skin Cream.
Yeah.
Step up level. I've got it on my desk. It is the unsexiest name and the unsexiest package. And it's got lots of AHAs and polyhydroxy acids as well. And it's in a sort of beeswax base. So it's thick and gungy. But if you've got dry, scaly feet and you want to just exfoliate them a bit and hydrate them and move them on a bit rather than just putting on a fine tuner, just moisturise. It sinks in a bit, but it doesn't really do the job. So that is fantastic. Where do vitamin C's come in? Do they come in next? Serums. Yeah, serums. I like a vitamin C serum. It's terribly expensive, but I do like the Revision Skin C-correcting, is it C-correcting complex?
C-plus correcting complex.
Yes, thank you. SkinCeuticals Floritin, expensive, not quite expensive. So Floritin is the one for slightly oilier skin rather than C ferulic. Just a really good formulation. So I like that. I guess retinoids come into treatments. I've always got a retinoid on the go and I love anything, whether it's a plain sort of retinoid or a sort of prescription-y something, or Alpharet, that I love, you know, Alpharet is from Skin Better Science. And they have combined, because normally you wouldn't want to have an alpha hydroxy acid at the same time as you're using a retinoid, but in this case they have combined retinaldehyde, haven't they, with an alpha hydroxy acid, and it's great and it's really effective and it's also really tolerable. Most people find they can get on with that, which is, so it's a kind of real skin transformer. You just have to be consistent with it. Another retinoid I love, actually, which everybody seems to get on with, is Medicate's Crystal Retinal, and that's retinaldehyde as well, which is many times, I think 11 times more effective than retinol is what they claim. And it's a step-up system, so you can start with the basic one and whack all the way out to 24, I think was the latest one I had from them, which is knockout killer levels. But still, it feels nice, doesn't send your skin mad and dry and falling off like plain tretinoin or whatever would. I'm less sort of elitist when I get to moisturizers. I will have any moisturizer. I mean, I love all the ones from the aesthetic companies like Clinest, the polynucleotides lot. They have a nice moisturizer I discovered when visiting their offices in Italy the other week. That was very nice. And Profilo has a great moisturizer, but any supermarket basic moisturizer I love. I love the Ordinary's natural moisturizing factors, the NMF plus HA. It's just nice. It sinks in, doesn't leave your skin greasy. Things like anything like Soap and Glory body butter, it's better for the body than the face, but that feels absolutely lovely. Mm. Sunscreen, always sunscreen. Can I talk about sunscreens too?
Mm. Yeah.
Okay. HelioCare. Classic brand in the aesthetic space. I think people are learning about that as well. There's so many different ones of gel textures and mineral ones. I like one called AR Fluid. I think that's its name.
Yes.
Because
it's
lightweight.
Is it the anti-redness?
Anti-redness, yeah. And it's nice and it's light and it's hydrating. So for people who think they hate sunscreen because they're too heavy or sticky, that is great. One I love, which is halfway to skincare, is a new brand called Intradermology.
I love that.
Intradermology Synergy 6. You know, these are such impossible names to remember. And that seems to suit everybody. Because I know I was at an aesthetics event. Well, we were all doing Pilates, but I was sitting on mats between one friend who has very dark brown to black skin and one friend who has palest Celtic skin. And they both said, oh, I love this. And he, right, okay. It suits both of you. I am going to try it. and it blends into any skin tone. It seems to suit my skin types, and it's got almost a bit of a kind of finishing effect to it as well. And then I love Altruist, which is cheap as chips and very widely available. And I have gallons of that. And Altruist is a brand done by a dermatologist, Andrew Burney, who spent too much time fixing skin cancer. And it is done for altruistic purposes. It raises money for charity with every purchase, even though it's so cheap. And it's lightweight and it's great. And I get all sorts of people on Instagram saying, but surely you wouldn't put that stuff on your face. And you think, yeah, I do. I absolutely do. And you can buy it by the liter as well. So if you have that by the sink downstairs, nobody should be allowed to leave the house without putting some of that on, because there's lots of it.
Such a great list. I'm loving this. And any listeners thinking, I can't keep up, don't worry, everything will be in the show notes. What about eye creams, hair care, and also cellulite as well? If you go into the body, does anything work for cellulite, do you think?
That is a good question. Hair care, hang on, let me think about hair care. Hair care. Oh, I love Michael Van Clark's Lifesaver products. Michael Van Clark is a brilliant hairdresser. He has this product range. I think it's vanclark.com, but you can find that in the notes. Anyway, there's a pre-wash which you can put into dry hair and leave for half an hour or overnight, which is great because it's much easier than putting something on wet hair and hanging around for half an hour. And that hydrates, it forces protein back into the hair as well, and just transforms hair, whether your hair is long and thick and out of order or thin and fragile. And then he's got a leave-in, Lifesaver leave-in conditioner, which I love as well, and which I use like a kind of daily hair moisturizer, just sort of slathering in handfuls, and it's good for styling. And I do like Olaplex, actually. That's got the great original Bond Builder. I think they're all numbered, Olaplex. The Bond Builder is 3. Then there's a shampoo, I think that's 4, which is really concentrated. I was given some recently, and the guy said, use this, only use a tiny bit. And of course, I forgot that completely until I put a whole handful on and thought, oh no, I'm going to end up with a kind of beehive of foam.
A hairdresser said to me, put the little bit in your hands and then you rub it together until it emulsifies, and then you put it in your hair. And yes, then you rub your hands again and put the rest of it in. I was told that by a hairdresser because
Well, I will remember that. There's a conditioner and a leave-in conditioner. I love those. I like Philip Kingsley's Hair Mist, Protective Hair Mist. I love, there's once a hair fragrance, a Byredo, amazing hair fragrance, which I love. Baldafrica smells terrific. It just follows you around until you wash your hair next. Sam Knight stuff is lovely. I particularly love that Cool Girl Texture Mist. I think everybody does. It smells amazing. Cellulite, look, cellulite is a kind of life's work. What really works for cellulite is, as well as eating cleaner and taking lots of exercise and drinking buckets of water and body brushing and all the rest of it, it is lymphatic drainage. So either manual lymphatic drainage massage or endomology, LPG endomology, those machines, it's extraordinary what they can shift in a session. Mm-hmm. Or the body balancer, which does the same sort of body balancer, looks like a huge sleeping bag with legs, and it uses air pressure to move the lymph back up your legs. So it feels like being squeezed by some giant snake, but it is terrific. And you know, if I do a course of either of those or one or two treatments, basically you a difference, your genes feel looser, all of that kind of stuff. And your cellulite looks different. But of course, as soon as she's stopped doing it, it comes back. But something that she's a friend of mine, but I still think that I'm not saying it because of that, the Legology products.
They're
Kate Chapman, they're really great. And they've got one called Peach Light, Peach-LITE, for a smooth bottom. And I thought, honestly, whatever next? Who's going to bother with that? But then tried it and thought, God, it's making my skin feel astonishing. So when you feel the need for a really smooth bottom, I would recommend that.
I actually really rate all of their products, and we all know cellulite's such a tricky one. Some people get it, other people don't. Even if some of the people who don't get it don't live a perfect lifestyle, other people who do. But the Legology products, I think, for home care are the closest I've found to a good solution for most people. They've got brilliant products.
Oh, that's great to hear.
On a similar note, what about beauty tech and gadgets? And again, including for your hair. I know you love your Dermalux Flex.
Love my Dermalux Flex. I would also use Saluma for LED home use because those are both medically certified technology. I get so many questions about all the other LED masks. I just don't think there's enough evidence to show that they do what they ought to do, and people are spending so much money on them. But I know Dermalux is a stretch, but you know, I know it works, so I love that. And smaller bits of tech, I am a new convert to the NIRA laser, NIRA, which is very small, but seems to show good results in their studies. And it's so quick, you can whip across your lip lines, which is what I'm doing in about 30 seconds. There's something called Canyon, and Ante's Canyon, which is like microcurrent and RF at the same time. So that I'm really curious about. I can't claim it's changed my face. The difficulty I find with these things is it's hard to show, it's hard not to tweak, but it's to show a clear before and after of what something has done on my face. So with a new device, I can only say it looks good and it seems to be doing whatever. Mm. So hair, mostly I have this hairband I nicked off my daughter, which she used to be keen on when she was 15, which is a very long time ago. And it's a hairband with a wire and it's a long thing. And I use that to make heatless curls and I wrap my hair up in that. I have a very basic styling tong. I have old hot rollers. Actually, I have a Dyson Airwrap, which I love dearly, but I barely know how to use it. I try, but you've got to be patient with these things, haven't you? And you've got to maybe hold that curl for a bit longer. And I sort of think, oh, come on. And then I lose patience.
And if it doesn't rain, it will just ruin anyway. It would be remiss of us not to touch on makeup, but we can't do it all. So let's stick to, I think, foundation and mascara. Do you have a desert island mascara and also foundation, hopefully at different price points and coverage? Because of course, some people would want a heavier coverage and some people much, much lighter.
Yeah, mascara. I love Maybelline's Great Lash. Lovely product. I've used it for decades. And a more elaborate mascara. Ruby Hammer's got this amazing new one. It looks like a tiny skinny brusher, which would do no good to anybody. But in fact, it does the business and it's a kind of tubing thing. So it stays with you. Plus, it's got a little brow gel in the other end. So that's lovely. Foundation. I've very much gone on to a Borean BB cream for all occasions and barely get back to foundation. I've got an Il Makiage one, which I love. Do you know that brand? It was targeted at me on social media. In the end, I fell for it, gave it a go. And actually, it's great. But otherwise, a lot of the time I go out without.
So, a big question. Would you or have you go or gone under the knife? And what are your thoughts on all the hype we see everywhere around deep plane facelifts? And which surgeons are on your radar?
Okay, well, absolutely, I would go under the knife. And I've already had a couple of eye lifts, in fact, which sounds a bit excessive. People say, did the first one not work? But the first one was like more than 10 years ago. And it was something I've been thinking of for ages because I've got eyelids that were looking heavy. And I had been thinking about it for a very long time. So I had that done. And then 10 years later, I wanted the ptosis, the drooping of the left eyelid, which had never really bothered me until I started having to be on camera and social media the whole time. And in order to try and get a picture where my left eyelid wasn't drooping, I'd have to sort of approach the camera with my left side of my face and yank the eye open. Anyway, I then thought it would be actually great to just have the whole thing done. So when the eyelid is drooping, you can have an operation to tighten up and balance the muscles in the eye, and obviously it needs to be done by an extremely competent oculoplastic surgeon. And when I was assessed for that, she said we could take out a bit of extra skin and those drooping fat pads as well.
Thanks.
What about 10 years on, if you've got the kind of eyelids that go very droopy, there will be more skin. So another 7 millimeters of skin was taken out, which that's about 14, 15 millimeters so far from those eyelids. And they, a lot of people say, oh, well, they're still a bit droopy, aren't they? Oh, thanks. People on Instagram are very frank. And you asked about deep plane facelifts. Yes, I would totally go and have a deep plane facelift. They're great. And if people don't know about it, it's a facelift where what the surgeons do, rather than peeling back the skin and moving the muscles right inside, they untether that whole layer, that whole kind of sandwich of skin and muscle. They untether it by untethering the ligaments that are holding that in place. So then they can move the whole thing upwards to a more favorable and youthful position. And it can look, it looks absolutely lovely. And yeah, I would go to Rajiv Grover like a shot for this. In fact, I was talking with him about this only the other day, but it was for quotes, not for, because normally I go and see him every couple of years just to catch up on his work and see what he's up to, because I've known him for like 20 years and I'm always asking for opinions from him. And he's been doing much more of these in the last couple of years, and they look lovely. They look very soft and very sort of easy healing. People are looking incredibly fresh, incredibly quickly. There's no sort of drama to it. George Orfaniotis, he does lovely work as well.
He does.
Jesper Sorensen, Tunch Chiriaki, all sorts of people.
And I also think outside London, Mark Pacifico and Nora Nugent are both fabulous as well.
I'm embarrassed that I'm only thinking, I haven't gone any further than
Central London. Give people options outside.
What about alternative, so-called alternative or complementary therapies? Is that your sort of thing?
Yeah, I love alternative stuff. I mean, in the 90s, as a journalist, I used to write about these things the whole time. We'd all be chasing around after Princess Diana or after Cherie Blair or whoever.
Yeah.
So whether it was a Reiki or reflexology or you name it, what I still do is a five-element acupuncture with Gerard Kite, who is amazing, masterly with that. And it's very hard to explain what's happening. It's not where you go and say, I have a sore elbow and they stick pins in your elbow. He has a chat about how you are in general. He takes your pulses, pleural pulses, in this kind of, in acupuncture, isn't it? And then decides on three or four key things to treat. It's all about bringing the body back into balance, getting the bits that are stuck, where the energy is stuck, moving. I love any sort of massage or bodywork or fascia release, anything of that. I spend inordinate amounts of money on that and physio and energy healing, that kind of thing. I'm not doing any of that at the moment, but used to absolutely love that. So no, I'm a big fan. I mean, if you find people who are really good at these things, then you understand what it's all about and why people make such a fuss about it.
Alice, top five supplements.
Only five.
And again, this was very funny when we were away together. You should have seen both of us with our supplements.
Bags of supplements.
I just have to give a little anecdote where Alice told me, Sophie, that you two were at lunch together and Alice took her supplements and you took out just that many supplements and managed to hoof them all down with a glass
in
of water
go.
And in one go. And Alice said, and she just giggled afterwards. And I thought, I can just imagine Sophie doing that.
There are quite a lot that all seem a very good idea, though. I know I have a friend who's a nutritionist who shakes his head sorrowfully, saying most of those things are a waste of room. And I say, well, they don't seem to be to me. So anyway, to the point, my top five are vitamin D, liposomal vitamin C, because that is really well absorbed. I'm scoffing a lot of Nutrido Time Plus, which is the one that helps you build more NAD in your body, NAD sort of driving all the energy mechanisms in the cells, which we lose as we get older. Primadine, which is a type of spermidine, which has an effect like autophagy without you having to do all the fasting to get it going in your body. Collagen supplements, omega-3s, that's at least five. Full spectrum hormone supplements. So there's probably a count of supplements. So I'll stop there.
Very useful, thank you. I was going to ask if you exercise, like
I
Sophie, I know the answer because I know you pretty much cycle everywhere, don't you?
Do you know, I don't think the cycling is exercise because I go pretty slowly, always within stopping distance of my brakes because the London traffic is so mad and I don't push it when cycling, but I guess it's kind of movement, which is good, isn't it? I do yoga. I rather fell off with the weights this year. I got ill earlier in the year. It's taken me a very long time to get back into doing anything. I'm rubbish at cardio, so I try and walk places. And I started cold water swimming in the Serpentine, which, as my daughter was saying, but you're only in there for 6 minutes. That's not really swimming. And I say, well, this is like, you have to think of it as a morning walk with a cold plunge attached. That is what I'm doing it for. So a reasonable bit of exercise. It's not particularly cleverly scheduled at the moment, but yeah, it's always the more the better with exercise, isn't it?
Again, I'm only laughing because I know a little bit. What's your relationship like with sleep? And can you recommend anything sleep or bedtime related that has helped you? Because I know you've struggled.
Oh, I can write you a very good article about all this. I mean, I always take me back to me and fellow journalists would be messaging in the middle of the night saying, oh my God, I'm still up at 1 o'clock in the morning and stuck on whatever. And they say, what are you writing? And I say, I'm writing how to de-stress and sleep better. It's that kind of madness. I'm not good at sleeping. I know what would benefit me. I find it hard to put my devices down a good hour before bedtime, which would probably help. I don't tend to do baths and bath oils and candles or apps. Latest toy is AlphaStim. It's a handheld little device. It is a proper medical device, and it uses cranial electrotherapy sort of stimulation. You clip it onto your earlobes. It sends a really low-level current through your brain to regulate your activity patterns in your brain. So that's meant to be good for sleeping, and I believe it's helping me. So I tend to get into bed after doing a few crucial stretches and one last attempt at a hand balance, which I sort of think if I do it often enough, this is a yoga thing, I'll get there. And then I get into bed and put that on and read. But it would be helpful if I read on something that wasn't an iPad, because I take melatonin as part of my hormone regime every night. So that helps me go to sleep, doesn't keep me asleep. So when I wake up in the middle of the night, I have taken to meditating. Otherwise, I will find myself on Instagram before I know it, and that's not helpful.
It's so addictive, isn't it?
Because otherwise they go, I can't be bothered to sit up and meditate, and that's going to take hours. But then I find an hour and a half's gone by, I may as well have sat up and done a proper meditation. So this is not good advice about sleep. I need to reread the book, Why We Sleep. I started it years ago and then I stopped because it was just too terrifying about how much damage we do to ourselves by not sleeping enough.
My husband said the same thing. He said, oh my goodness me, I'm reading this and getting stressed about the fact that I don't sleep. I'm actually on the back of mine and Sophie's episode with Professor David Nutt on medicinal cannabis. I'm about to explore that. So I will feed back to you, Alice, on how that goes, because I'm assured that will help my sleep. So I will let you know.
What is this amazing treatment that you do? Because I can't even remember the name of it now. Bioresonance. I didn't know how to explain it, but you did it. I felt terrific afterwards. So I was pushed to explain what it was doing. And I slept pretty well after that.
I think it's a whole other podcast episode, isn't it, really? It's one that I can't possibly explain and I need to have an elevator pitch, but it is bioresonance therapy, which is to do with magnetism. It's almost like PEMFmats Plus.
I loved it.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. Thank you. So here's a random question. What would we never guess about you from your CV?
Oh, that I'm squeamish. I can't watch surgery. Yeah, you can laugh. I mean, other colleagues who do this, they love, you know, they love watching surgery. And I have surgeon friends who ring up as a great favour and they'd say, would you like to come in and watch me do this thing, this procedure? Oh, I love you, but I can't possibly. Somebody was saying, come and watch my latest nose adjustment thingy. I will be ill. I love the theory of it all. I wouldn't mind having whatever done, but yeah, having to be half awake while I had my eye muscles adjusted, that gave me sleepless nights for weeks because the thought of being awake and completely freaked me out. But in fact, you know, they had wonderful anaesthetists or sedation. So I just felt very calm, thought, gosh, there they are. There were two surgeons operating at once on that, staring into my eyes and saying, move your eyes to the left. I think that may look a bit startled. I think, oh no, please change it. And it was fine. But yeah, I'm squeamish.
What are the best and the worst pieces of advice that you've ever been given?
Best, I think it sounds very cliche, but the kind of pay it forward, do as you would be done by, being nice to people, but being the kind of person your dog thinks you are, all of that, just trying to meet people with generosity and then niceness sounds feeble, but unless people prove them to be very unworthy of it, in which case I'm still perfectly capable of bearing a grudge. But if a job's worth doing, it's worth doing properly. That slightly leans a bit too much towards perfectionism, but I think if you're going to do something, get into it and do it with enthusiasm. Worst advice, the kind of save it for best thing. I was helping clear out the flat of a poor friend who died recently, and there were things she'd clearly been saving for best and not used. And I just thought, that's, you know, people who say, oh, I wouldn't do that, I'd keep it. You think, no, now is the time. The thing about, you need to wait for the time to be right. You know, no, don't wait, because life is quite short.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Alice. And we talked about the Tweakments Guide, and you can find that at thetweakmentsguide.com. And if you're not already doing so, please do follow Alice on socials at Alice Hart Davis. Thank you so much for joining us, Alice.
Well, thank you both. It's been an absolute delight.
And that ends this week's podcast. If you want to find out more about me and my work, or maybe book a consultation, head to drsophieschotter.com, and you can find me on socials at drsophieschotter. And again, thank you so much for listening.